The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, July 24th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And more importantly, happy birthday, Mom! It's my mom's 65th birthday today. Happy birthday, Mom. I hope you're having a good one. Today, we're having a bit of a Clint Eastwood day. There's a little bit of good, there's a little bit of bad, and there's a little bit of ugly. The good is that today is our last day at our temporary studios here at Rollatide Studios. Big thanks to Herb Thrasher and Green Kim for lending us the space here, because we're on our way to our brand new Rolla J Studios at the Buck and Bronco House. We got the internet installed today. We just tested it out. 60 megs download, 12 and a half megs upload, and it's going to get better from there. So we're really looking forward to our first new show. Now, that means that we're only going to do hour one today. For Toker Talk Radio, we're going to take the day off, tear down this studio, and try and get it set up as quickly as we can over at the new location. Now, that's the good news. We got a new studio. The bad news is that today is Brian the Red's last day, at least for a while. Brian's out there being confronted by Babylon and must make money. And we totally understand that. So we wish you well, Brian, and thank you for all the hard work. And don't worry, folks, Brian will be back. I have a good feeling about this. And now, the ugly. Oh, this is breaking news just tweeted to me by Randy in our chat room. DEA is raiding marijuana dispensaries in the Puget Sound area, Seattle, Washington area. Yes, federal agents are raiding a number of medical marijuana dispensaries in the Puget Sound region. This is reported by the NewsTribune.com. DEA spokesman Jody Underwood said the operations were underway, declined to provide any details about how many dispensaries or how many search warrants. Washington State legalized possession of up to an ounce last fall, but marijuana is still illegal under federal law. So any of you activists out there in the Seattle area, get out on the streets, get your signs out, get to protesting, bring your cameras, your camera phones, and document as much as you can. If there's anyone out there live in the area who wants to call in, our phone number here is 971-533-7111. Now, we got a jam-packed show today. We got a celebration of law enforcement against prohibition, 10 years of LEAP. We'll be bringing you video, plus an appearance from Peter Crist. In our Radical Rant, I'll teach you four sneaky ways the cops are trying to bust you. And in Behind the Headlines, we are going to take, what are we doing in Behind the Headlines? Oh my God, I got behind here. So much stuff I can't keep track of all. Let's see here. Behind the Headlines. Oh, crack babies. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, July 24th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Denver auditor suggests 3.5% tax for marijuana sales. This from the Denver Post. Denver auditor Dennis Gallagher disagrees with Mayor Michael Hancock's recreational tax target, arguing the city should seek a starting tax rate of 3.5% instead of the mayor's suggested 5% tax rate. Gallagher warned Denver City Council members in a letter sent to Councilman Charlie Brown Monday that the city's 5% tax rate plan risks sending users back to the, quote, dark shadows of the black market, end quote. The city expects it will have to spend about $9.4 million on education, enforcement, and regulation of the pot industry, for which the tax could compensate. The council will determine a starting tax rate and ceiling at its meeting Monday. The city will then pose those rates to voters in November. If approved, the council can raise the recreational marijuana tax rate to the determined cap. Colorado Springs bans recreational marijuana shops, from Yahoo News. Officials in Colorado's second-largest city voted on Tuesday to ban recreational marijuana shops, becoming the largest community in the state to utilize an opt-out provision of the law that legalized the non-medical use of pot. After 2 hours of public comments, the Colorado Springs City Council voted 5-4 to bar retail pot shops from opening within the city limits. The debate and vote came after Mayor Steve Bach publicly said he would veto the ordinance if the council approved allowing the recreational outlets. Colorado Springs has a population of about 420,000, with a large military and evangelical Christian presence, and is one of the most conservative and Republican areas in a state which in recent election cycles has turned leftward. Colorado Springs does have medical marijuana dispensaries, which would be unaffected by the recreational pot vote. Elected bodies of 35 Colorado towns or cities have voted to opt out of allowing recreational marijuana stores, according to data from the Colorado Municipal League. The possession and use of small amounts of cannabis by adults is still legal in the communities that have banned non-medical pot shops. Uruguayan President Jose Mujica wants to legalize marijuana even if he's never tried it, from ABC News. Earlier this week, Uruguayan President Jose Mujica, a progressive politician who is pushing a law to legalize marijuana consumption in Uruguay, confessed that he has never smoked weed. Quote, I have never tried it in my life, and I don't know what it is, end quote, Mujica told Radio Carve, a local radio station. He's added that he's aware, quote, a lot of young people have tried it, end quote. Mujica's somewhat surprising admission came shortly before he met with Jose Miguel Insulza, Secretary General of the Organization of American States, to discuss a recent report on drug consumption in the Americas. The report favored drug decriminalization of marijuana, an initiative that Uruguayan legislators have been discussing for nearly a year. Mujica, a former guerrilla fighter known for his humility and kindness, and the Broad Front, a coalition of left-wing parties of which Mujica is a member, are supporting this bill, which would allow Uruguayans over the age of 18 to buy up to 40 grams of weed per month from state-sanctioned distributors. Medical marijuana backers take Bellingham to court again, from the Bellingham Herald. A new lawsuit filed against the city of Bellingham by Seattle-based Cannabis Action Coalition sets the stage for one more legal battle over the legality of organizations that provide medical marijuana. In court filings, attorneys for Northern Cross noted that state law does allow for the use of medical marijuana, and Northern Cross attempted to avoid legal pitfalls in providing medical patients with a medical cannabis access point. Northern Cross accepted suggested donations for its marijuana products and provided them free of charge to those who could not pay, according to its attorneys. But Bellingham police painted a different picture. In an affidavit submitted in the criminal case against Northern Cross, Deputy Whatcom County Prosecuting Attorney James Hulbert portrayed Northern Cross as little more than a medical mask concealing a profitable marijuana business. Among other things, Hulbert testified that Northern Cross customers were reselling their purchases on the sidewalk outside Northern Cross. Marijuana use in adolescents may cause permanent brain abnormalities, mouse study suggests, from Science Daily. Regular marijuana use in adolescents, but not adulthood, may permanently impair brain function and cognition and may increase the risk of developing serious psychiatric disorders such as schizophrenia, according to a recent study in the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Researchers hope that the study, published in Neuropsychopharmacology, a publication of the journal Nature, will help to shed light on the potential long-term effects of marijuana use, particularly as lawmakers in Maryland and elsewhere contemplate legalizing the drug. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, July 24th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at the 1980s Reagan-era crack baby epidemic and what the science has to say about that. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Legalizing. Don't criticize.
Legalizing. I'm just overjoyed. I've been cannabis activist for 40 years.
We're turning the corner on a failed policy that's been disastrous for our communities, and things are going to get better.
80 years ago, we repealed alcohol prohibition in this state. We did it prior to the federal government, and we're doing the same thing when it comes to marijuana. We are a step ahead, and we will continue to lead the way.
It means I'm going to smoke a lot of weed tonight!
Woo! Some call it marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Some of them call it ganja.
Welcome back, everybody. 14 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines. And I'm a child of the 80s, as many of my listeners may be. And you'll probably remember back in the day the big scare about crack cocaine. God, it was everywhere. You know, we had people on the news on 60 Minutes and president himself coming out. You know, this is crack. It's terrible. Oh, my gosh. It's super addictive. You try it, you'll get higher than you've ever gotten in your life. One hit and you'll be addicted. So whatever you do, don't do this. Don't do crack because it gets you really, really high. And it's really cheap, too. You can get on the street. It's really cheap. But don't do it because you'll get addicted immediately because it gets you really high and it's really cheap. I'm not exaggerating too much, people. I'm really not exaggerating that much. That was the feeling you got from some of these news stories. The thought that, gee, it's almost as if the CIA was trying to get cocaine into America and sell a whole lot of it really quickly to fund all sorts of black operations down there in Central America. But that's a whole nother rant for a whole nother time. The crack baby thing is one of the things that came out of this 1980s scaremongering. And the idea here, the theme was that women, particularly black women in the city, would be smoking crack while they're pregnant. And then the little babies would come out, they'd be all developmentally disabled, and throughout the rest of their lives, they'd be, they'd have learning difficulties and spasms and, the crack babies. Look how bad crack is because, won't you think of the children? It was just another one of those WOTC sort of comments. What about the children? So this crack baby stigma, if you will, was perpetuated throughout the 1980s and into the early 1990s, and it led to a lot of women doing a lot of time. When it was found that they were born addicted and, they'd throw on the child endangerment charges. And really, that was about the era when we first started seeing that being used by prosecution in drug cases a whole lot. The stigma of the crack baby and what a terrible damage it would do to the baby brought about prosecutors tacking on child endangerment charges, child abuse charges against these women. So in addition to whatever drug charges, they'd also be doing time for child charges, have to go through all sort of supervised visits, have their kids put with foster care, which is another profit-making industry. And I got a great article coming out on that on Alternate, but we'll save that for later. Anyway, this whole crack baby scare did not have a shred of science behind it. Not then. And certainly not now. This is a new article up on Alternate, speaking of Alternate, entitled Study Debunks Myth of the Crack Baby. And they say, after nearly 25 years of research, one of the nation's largest long-term studies on the so-called crack baby epidemic of the 1980s has concluded that there are no statistically significant differences in the long-term health and life outcomes between full-term babies exposed to cocaine in utero and those who were not. Let's underline that one part. No statistically significant differences in the long-term health and life outcomes between crack babies and non-crack babies. Now, these are researchers at the Albert Einstein Medical Center, and this was reported in the Philadelphia Inquirer. The chairman of neonatology at Albert Einstein said this, quote, "Poverty is a more powerful influence on the outcome of inner city children than gestational exposure to cocaine," end quote. Being poor hurts kids more than crack. Now, while the cocaine exposed children and the control group performed on the same levels, what they found is both the control group and the crack babies, the so-called crack babies, were all lagging behind kids that were in the suburbs, kids with better incomes, kids with better family situations. So when they were lagging behind on both developmental and intellectual measures, that's when the team started to think, maybe there's something to this other than the crack. And they found that it was the poverty. They started figuring out all the other confounding factors and weeding those out statistically. And they found that these kids that were raised in more poverty had worse outcomes, whether or not crack was involved or not. They did find that the kids that were raised in a nurturing home did better than the kids that weren't nurtured. No surprise there. But here's some of the scary statistics they found by interviewing these kids and trying to find out what's going on in their life. And ask yourself how well you would have turned out as a kid if this was your neighborhood, if this was your daily life. 81% of the children had seen someone being arrested. 74% of the children had heard gunshots. 35% of the children had seen someone getting shot. 19% had seen a dead body outside. And they were only 7 years old at the time. These kids all adjusted to age seven. By the seventh year of life, one out of five kids almost had seen a dead body outside. And so the crack situation, the cocaine, That's not really so much of a factor as growing up somewhere where there's gunshots and you're not nurtured and you're getting low nutrition and you're going to the worst schools and you're fearing for your safety at every moment. If this country really had a WOTC, had a what about the children moment, they'd make drugs legal and take all that money we're spending on prisons and prohibition and start putting it into Head Start and kindergartens and school lunches and mentoring programs and after school programs. What about the children? Stop spending money trying to put me and Brian in a cage for smoking this bong. And, hey, buy some school books that have been written in the 21st century. There's an idea.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD.
Big Daddy Fink.
Funky roller ring, roller ring, roller ring.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
Well, this is my last time here at Roll a Tide Studios, and at least for a little while, it's my last time throwing to Brian the Red for an Irie Wednesday, man. So here you go.
All right. Well, not so much in an Irie mood just because of current situations going on. When I was younger, I, you know, led a slightly different path. I was known as a juggalo.
A juggalo.
And for those who don't know, that's just a fan or, you know, mentality of the people who follow the group Insane Clown Posse, and, you know, they're people. This is one of a track by one of the groups that used to sing with them, Twisted. This is called Karma.
Relation, the second coming, the dark spawn. We're preparing the path for the children of Babylon.
in search of Zion. Over chemical release, at least it gives us inner peace for a second so we can sleep. Riddled by daydreams and puzzled by life, all of us are running through darkness in search of the light. As the demons disappear like phantoms and mirrors and reappear, transformed in the form of your fears. I got a feeling that you think it's all phony and far-fetched, till you're devoid of all hope and virtually helpless. It's necessary to never let it get worse than it's gotten. It'll go on forever, even after you're rotten. And depending on the karma, spirit dwelling in inner being will determine eternity, unless you intervene with your man-made destiny in a myth that it would hold. You will never find the light as long as your eyes are closed. Are you going to hell or heaven? Did you walk with the sinners or pray with the reverend? Tell the truth, I did a little of both, but ain't no telling where I'm going till my body's a ghost. And we say
the whole world's gonna hate me in the air, but I'm surrounded by nothing but the fire. Nothing but the fire. You can lie, but you're soaking in sin. When you die, let your karma begin.
From the beginning to the end,
you can see it all around you, right? So don't act like you don't recognize the light. And in spite of all the things that you did, and I forgive, you will end up sitting where the devil is. I told you all in the beginning I would have the last laugh, and your calm is the reason that you burn like gas. And in the past, I've been known to be a little too passive, but like I just said, the last one laughing. Hopefully this all makes sense when you're looking at the fiery fence. And I commence to keep walking through time with a list of these names that I can guarantee the karma's gonna burn in these flames. So speak my name and hate me for what I'm saying, but trust me, I ain't playing. I think you should start praying, hoping it starts paying off. The poison that you're spraying often enough to really tick me off, and I bust.
Are you going to hell or heaven? Did you walk with the sinners or pray with the reverend? Tell the truth, I did a little of both, but ain't no telling where I'm going till my body's a ghost. And we say
the whole world's gonna hate me in the air, but I'm surrounded by nothing but the fire. Nothing but the fire. You can lie, but you're soaking in sin. When you die, let your karma begin.
From the beginning to the end.
Now you can do whatever you want to me, but in the end you're gonna burn like weed. It may seem like he's working for me, but I swear there's no ties. It's a collaboration of your bullshit and lies, and your demise will come when I rise like the sun and bring the drama with the motherfucking beast. I'm the chosen one, so all your guns are obsolete. You better bring the devil when you think of fucking with me.
At the point where you cease and exist to be, and clench your fists in a state of the sight of your own grim reality, it ain't nobody's fault but your own. You had a choice in life, now it's gone, and it's time to move along. You can float to the heavens where the angels fly away, and descend in the gallows where the atheists learn to pray. Ain't no place you wanna stay, so you better choose wisely, unless you wanna gamble what whatever might be. Are you going to hell or heaven? Did you walk with the sinners or pray with the reverend? Tell the truth, I did a little of both, but ain't no telling where I'm going till my body's a ghost. And we say
the whole world's gonna hate me in the air, but I'm surrounded by nothing but the fire. Nothing but the fire. You can lie, but you're soaking in sin. When you die, let your karma begin.
From the beginning to the end.
Can I take your order?
You need 15 cheeseburgers.
Can I take your order?
Can I take your number?
Can I take your order?
Have you got any eggs?
Can I take your order?
Man, I don't have any money.
I don't have any money.
All right, well, hey, go, go.
Man, watch out!
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 4:20 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
Why One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
No, your calendar is not wrong. It's not Thursday. It is Wednesday. We normally do our Law Enforcement Against Prohibition segment on Thursday, but I wanted to add this special segment today to celebrate 10 years of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. As the intro suggests, it's not the drug war, it's the Prohibition War. Prohibition is the problem, not the drugs. And these law enforcers have learned that. Headed by Neil Franklin and started by Jack Cole, Norm Stamper, a bunch of great people, Peter Crist, too many for me to name because I'll forget somebody, I'm sure. What a fantastic organization. It's made great strides. We're starting to see a lot of them appear on our network TV, our cable news, talking head shows. Here's a video from Leap about their 10 years, followed by Peter Crist on television. A great presentation from Peter Crist. So Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, leap.cc.
The war on drugs has absolutely nothing to do with drugs. It's about power, it's about control, coercion.
Used to be that they would have a debate about drug policy, and at one podium would be standing the police officer or the judge, and at the other podium would be the crazy hippie dopey guy who says that drugs should be legalized. You tended to want to side with the professional. And then we created LEAP.
Legalizing drugs? That's the message a new billboard in the metro is advertising.
And you might be surprised to hear who's funding it all.
Well, the group funding the billboard is actually comprised of current and former law enforcement officers.
An unlikely pair now backing efforts to legalize marijuana in Colorado, a retired Denver police lieutenant and a former Lafayette judge.
It may be hard to believe, but this is the face of legalizing drugs.
And now we have changed the dynamic of that debate.
The way we got rid of the crime associated with food.
And it would allow local governments to tax it. It's getting support from an unlikely source, former members of law enforcement.
But first tonight, former prosecutors, former judges, those people who once enforced the law, now say that marijuana should be legal.
Former Yuba County Sheriff's Deputy Nate Bradley says resources wasted on marijuana busts could be better spent elsewhere.
Should marijuana be legal? It also has a law enforcement divide.
This debate is pitting badge against badge.
Tonight, the legalize it side has some reinforcements. This comes from some folks that might surprise you.
They're going around the state with messages like the one delivered to this Rotary Club meeting in Federal Way.
Our war on drugs has failed.
James Doherty is a speaker for a group known as LEAP, or Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He's a former prosecutor who wants voters to approve Initiative 502.
I think there are a lot of parallels between what happened here on Tuesday and what eventually happened in Prohibition back in the 20s in the United States, and it started state by state.
Neil Franklin, Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a three-decade-long career in law enforcement. Sir, thank you very much for your time tonight. You speak with uncommon authority on this subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
That is what LEAP brought to the discussion, and that's why we have changed the discussion forever on this issue.
With speakers in over 80 countries, LEAP's credibility and impact are going global.
We put together a declaration and three resolutions to submit to the UN Narcotics Control Group. We got a lot of things in there that would have never been in there had we not been there. And all about human rights, all about harm reduction, the fact that all drug use isn't necessarily drug abuse, you know.
This is a perfect example of why Law Enforcement Against Prohibition as an organization of former police officials, criminal justice professionals, is so important to the contribution towards this caravan.
LEAP has also expanded its scope to work with those most affected by the war on drugs, as well as those willing to oppose it.
People don't expect cops and clergy to be on this side of the issue, but in fact we are.
We cannot duck this issue. I couldn't duck it anymore. I couldn't sweep if I was not advocating to get rid of the war on drugs.
You can't get to
to end the war on drugs unless you end prohibition. They couldn't do it with alcohol, and you can't do it with drugs.
They are arrested in wholesale numbers. Corner clearing operations in disregard of the Constitution are routine in my town, where under our present governor when he was mayor, 27,000 black people on average were arrested each year without being charged with crimes.
For decades, this year, in the war on drugs, over $1 trillion. There's our health care budget.
Since 1985, the rate of incarceration has increased by 800%. 800% for black women.
Even in Brazil, we have in the Northeast, there is a marijuana production. Mm-hmm. And there are children working there. And you don't have labor laws if it's in an illegal market.
These are actions that are happening all over the country. Police officers and organizers on the grassroots level are all coming together to say, let's put an end to this really disastrous failed war on drugs.
My name is Karen Hawks. I'm a mother, a Girl Scout leader, a Sunday school teacher, and I served as a Massachusetts state trooper for 13 years. In Mexico, 10,000 children have been orphaned by violence caused by the illegal drug market, not by the drugs themselves.
She had a negative drug test for marijuana on a probation for shoplifting. Now she's going back to state prison. Now she's giving her children away to somebody that's going to fail, and she's going to lose her children. Is that an appropriate penalty?
Is that protecting our kids?
Is that law protecting our kids?
When LEAP speakers talk about the distorting, corrupting influence of prohibition on their profession, it is from firsthand experience.
We have changed. Law enforcement is no longer about being a peace officer and serving our community. It's about policing people. It engenders a disrespect for a profession that I loved. And our communities don't respect us, and they view us as occupiers.
Going after DUI suspects, enforcing domestic violence and child abuse laws, that's what makes police work noble. That's what police work ought to be directed at.
Not once in 20 years did a parent ever turn their child in for drugs. The last thought in the world was to turn this over to the police. They found other ways to deal with that problem. And we as a society should find other ways.
And the core of those other ways is that even the heartbreak of addiction should be treated as a personal or public health issue, never as a criminal one.
Insight is part of a program to bring people who are marginalized out of society back into society, back into the light of healthcare.
Take your story back to the state so people can understand that this is a medical situation, this is a health issue.
The results of that are amazing. There hasn't been a single overdose death there in 15 years. Imagine all the lives that are saved. AIDS and hepatitis in that country dropped to the lowest rate of any country in Europe because they're not sharing needles anymore. Crime was cut by 60%.
That's the most important.
Yeah.
If American policemen can stand up and say these things and put them on the web and have billboards on freeways, so, you know, that is really going to help, because you know, there we are in the lion's den, if you like. And these people have guts. I respect that. When I go somewhere to speak, I always make it clear that I am a member of LEAP and that is where I'm coming from.
If you use that money to create programs that give people hope for the future instead of removing all their hope by arrest and imprisonment, can you imagine how many fewer drug users we'd have?
It's going to take all of us in order to do it, and I just thank God for this setting and being a part of it.
Recreational drugs are undoubtedly an international problem that very few countries, and unfortunately we'd have to include New Zealand here, are making any headway with.
It's prompted a bunch of US celebrities to turn the just say no philosophy on its head. They reckon maybe saying yes could be a much smarter idea.
They think locking up users in the war on drugs isn't achieving much at all. Here's Craig Stanaway.
Celebrities and drugs aren't usually the best mix.
I am on a drug, it's called Charlie Sheen.
This week, though, the likes of Kim Kardashian, Will Smith, Scarlett Johansson and Richard Branson, amongst others, have harnessed their power for good or evil, depending on how you see things. They've asked President Obama to rethink the so-called war on drugs and stop locking up so many people for minor drug offences. Here in New Zealand, calls for softer drug laws have a habit of falling on deaf ears.
There's not a single solitary chance that as long as I'm the Minister of Justice, we'll be relaxing drug laws in New Zealand.
But the ball does seem to be rolling, albeit fairly slowly. Portugal's drug abuse rates have halved since decriminalising all personal use in 2001. Two American states have legalised some cannabis use. Others are set to follow, and New Zealand is leading the way with its approach to regulating legal highs like this.
It's really about giving an assurance to the users, to their parents in many cases, and to the wider community that the products that are available are safe.
So we're regulating synthetic cannabis, but maintaining a hard line against the real stuff.
80% of crime is alcohol and drug related. So if the police target dealers in particular, then that's going to have an impact on the overall crime statistics.
With half of all adult New Zealanders having puffed the herb at some point, and minor drug convictions costing us around $60 million a year, it's likely the call for change is only going to get louder.
But there is an organisation in the US called LEAP. It stands for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. It wants to go a lot further.
Yeah, they say drugs need to be legalised and regulated. I spoke to the vice chair of LEAP, Peter Crist, and asked him how doing that would in any way help the drug problem.
Legalizing drugs is not about solving the drug problem. Legalizing drugs is about shutting down the underground marketplace that the terrorists and gangsters are financing themselves off of. And dealing with the drug problem is an educational and a healthcare problem, and stop that creating an underground marketplace for this. We tried this with alcohol between 1920 and 1933. And we found out that alcohol did not create people like Al Capone. Prohibition of alcohol is what created people like Al Capone. And in 1933, we decided to legalize alcohol. That didn't solve our drinking problem, but it put a big dent in our crime and violence problem. What we have to do is get the gangsters, thugs, and terrorists out of this industry, deal with this as a healthcare and an educational problem, and move on.
Critics, though, say if you take away the illegality of drugs, that's going to turn would-be drug users into rampant drug users.
First off, I want to say that anybody who isn't using drugs in your society or our society today is not using those drugs because they can't get them. I'm sure drugs are just as available in every city in New Zealand as they are in every city in America. And the fear that everybody will become a drug addict was exactly the fear that people tried to sell us when they said that we shouldn't legalize alcohol in the early 1930s. They said everybody will become a drunk and it'll destroy society. And that's exactly what happened. We legalized alcohol and everybody became a drunk and we lost World War II and we're all speaking. Of course that didn't happen. What happened is people responsibly use this drug. Some people don't use it at all. Some people use it recklessly and irresponsibly. But the vast majority of the people that use alcohol use it responsibly.
So what you're saying is this is about turning drugs into a case of supply and demand.
When you're talking about consensual adult behavior, when you're talking about things that consenting adults want to do with each other. I want to sell you drugs, you want to buy my drugs. When you make that behavior illegal in a society, you create crime. And if there is money connected to that activity in society, then you also create violence. And we are saying at LEAP that we are not about the drugs. Don't use any of them, they're all terrible. Be as drug-free as you can be, but to use prohibition to deal with this drug problem is contrary to what we're trying to accomplish.
Now, we've touched on, obviously, drugs and alcohol. What about cigarettes? Some people say just banning cigarettes would end that problem altogether.
We in the last 10 years have gotten 50% of the adult cigarette smokers to give up smoking cigarettes. And how do we do that? Well, we went around and we burned all the tobacco fields or we locked up all the tobacco cellars. No, that ain't what we did. What we did was we educated the people and we made it a little bit less convenient to smoke. You know, you got to go outside. You can't sit in the bar and smoke anymore. And 50% of our adult cigarette smokers have given up tobacco. We haven't had that success rate with any illegal drug anywhere.
Yeah, he talks really well, and he's quite convincing.
Very.
And we brought this up on Facebook today, and we got, well, it's really controversial, right? People have got a lot to say on this particular issue. Let me throw this one at you, Greg, because you know his arguments probably better than we do. Tennille says that the thought of legalising pee makes her shudder. And you would get that, right, with all the crime and violence that pee causes.
Absolutely.
Why, how could we do it?
But the point Peter made right at the beginning is you get rid of the people who are making pee now, who, across the board, are criminals because it's illegal, and you make it regulated and you decriminalise it, you take that element away from it, you're going to make it, you know, you're not going to see the people who are making money out of it, making money out of it. It's going to be regulated. But you also, like he said, you're not going to see the whole world go, oh, pee, it's legal, I'll give it a try. It's just, he made a really good point, which we weren't able to use in the interview, but about the prisons in America. 4,500 prisons in America, 2.2 million inmates, not one of them is drug-free. And his point is, if you can't make that environment drug-free, which is so locked down, you're just not going to do it out in the wider society.
Prisons in the world.
Absolutely.
Stephen Rorton says legalising all drugs will increase the rate of use and abuse because it's more readily available and therefore everybody will try it, or the, sends the message to the drug users.
I don't understand what he's saying.
I don't understand. No, I don't understand.
No. Peter was saying, like, no one is not taking drugs because they're illegal, but I think there'd be people who would be more likely to give them a try if they weren't illegal.
I think at the harder end of things, what we're talking about, you know, heroin, pee, cocaine, no one's going to go, oh, I've always wanted to give it a bash. I don't think.
But my daughter turns 18, she says, well, am I going to try cannabis? Well, the government says it's okay.
But no, but that's the point he made as well.
Earlier than that, Jesse just said.
No, but as he said right at the beginning, we're not saying drugs are good, drugs are bad, but there needs to be education. They are bad, like cigarettes. People give up because they know they're bad and it's out.
And in Craig Stanaway's story that we ran right at the top, you will have heard of the example of Portugal. It is, once they took the criminality away from cannabis, they were able to use education and health care issues.
Exactly.
Well, it feels wrong to me, but you've heard the arguments. We want to hear if you're convinced. We're asking, do you think New Zealand should legalise all drugs, like Peter Crist was suggesting? You can vote at 7sharp.co.nz on Facebook, or you can text us. Just text A or B. Just text the letters to 8875, and we'll bring you the results a little bit later on in the show.
Welcome back. Let's have a look now at the results of our poll we launched earlier. We're asking, do you think New Zealand should legalise all drugs?
Oh.
66% of you through a fug of cannabis have said yes. 34%. Now, that's interesting. This, of course, on the back of the Leap interview we did before with a group in America.
So he made a very good argument.
He made a very strong argument.
Maybe a particular special interest group were answering that poll more than others. And if so, well motivated.
Right. It couldn't be the people of New Zealand were convinced by a reasonable argument. Now, imagine what that actually means for the people there at 7 Sharp in the NZ. That means only stoners are watching your show. or a disproportionate number of your audience are stoners, so maybe it's not the best idea to piss them off.
Big thanks to Leap for letting us broadcast those videos, and if you haven't visited leap.cc, go ahead and do it, and donate, help them out. It's one of the most effective organizations out there. All right, when we come back, we're going to have a little bit of a time for a radical rant. I'm going to tell you about the 4 sneaky ways cops are trying to bust tokers. Stay tuned.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Greatest threats to liberty has been the government taking people's liberty for things that people are in favor of. The Pew Research Group shows that 52% of Americans think marijuana should not be illegal. And yet there are people in jail, and your Justice Department is continuing to put people in jail for sale and use on occasion of marijuana. That's something the American public has finally caught up with. It was a cultural lag, and it's been an injustice for 40 years in this country to take people's liberty for something that was similar to alcohol. You have continued what is allowing the Mexican cartels power and the power to make money, ruin Mexico, and hurt our country by having a prohibition in the late 20th and 21st century. We saw it didn't work in this country in the 20s. We remedied it. This is the time to remedy this prohibition. And I would hope you would do.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
You know, the cops are out there. They're trying to find ways to bust you for using marijuana. And Kristen Gwynn out there at alternet.org has written a great piece, a nice little list of the four shady ways police bust people for drugs. And this is a good little primer to go over here as far as what you need to know on some of these things. First of all, understand that the whole reason why we've got this war on drugs and these cops trying to use these shady ways to bust people is because of the profit incentive of marijuana and of drugs in general. There's a profit incentive for them to go after us. They receive all sorts of drug task force grants. They get drug asset forfeiture to go after us. And then, of course, the fact that, you know, a drug transaction or taking drugs are victimless crimes. Nobody's complaining except the cops. So that makes it another crime that's more difficult to solve. I mean, when in the case of, you know, rape and murder and theft, we all want someone to go after the rapist, the murderer, the thief. There's a victim there that needs to be brought, you know, that needs some justice. So that's part of the reason why we're using these shady, shady tactics. Here are the four ones that come to mind most recently. Number one, fake drug checkpoints. Now, this is something that just recently took place in Mayfield Heights, Ohio. We gave you the heads up on this in our news segment, and it's where they put these big signs on the interstate. Warning, drug checkpoint ahead with drug sniffing dogs. Right? Now, what most people don't know, and why should they, but most people don't know that drug checkpoints like that have been unconstitutional since 2000. The Supreme Court ruled in 2000 that having a traffic checkpoint to search for illegal drugs violates the Fourth Amendment. The only reason cops can have checkpoints is A, to reduce drunk driving, you know, impaired driving by alcohol, and B, border checkpoint types, you know, where they're, you know, searching for illegal immigrants. That's the only two things that are constitutionally allowed. So most people don't know that. And so what the cops do is they put the big sign up, right? And the sign is, after the sign, there's an exit, you know, on the freeway, and then further down is where the supposed drug checkpoint is. Well, they check for people coming off the exit, people throwing pipes and joints and stuff out the window, people, you know, doing any sort of pretext they can use to pull them over. So if you see a drug checkpoint ahead sign, keep going. Drive like normal. There is no drug checkpoint ahead. The number two way the cops are trying to bust you is by having classes to teach them the loopholes they need to know to bust people. This was in California. The California Narcotics Officers Association had a class that was closed to the public to teach officers how to get around Prop 215. You know, despite the fact the voters approved it, and despite the fact the research shows, you know, numerous medical applications for cannabis, the California Narcotics Officers Association says, quote, "There is no justification for using marijuana as medicine," end quote. Because of, you know, all the time they spent in medical school, they know this stuff. Anyway, they had a course, and this was the quote from the course.
This course will focus on California's medical marijuana laws and how they apply to illegal storefront sales, dispensaries of medical marijuana, and cultivation sites claiming exemption under California law. Investigative techniques and methods of shutting down dispensaries and cultivation sites that were developed and tested will be discussed. This is a truly necessary class for anyone who must deal with the issues of medical marijuana dispensaries. End quote. So there you go. They're learning how to get around every little loophole they can find. The number three method is kind of disgusting as far as how what cops are doing these days, and that is the body cavity searches. We told you the story of Angel Dobbs and Ashley Dobbs, her niece, and you saw that video here on 420 Radio if you're watching our webcam. And this is where the two women are pulled over. The cop claims that he smells some pot, so he calls a female trooper in. Female trooper in front of the squad car on the side of the road in view of the dash cam using one glove, then goes and cops a feel with the vagina and the anus of these women, slipping fingers inside, using the same glove just in case these women were, what, hiding a doobie? I mean, you claimed you smelled pot, right? What, you thought there was an eighth tucked up in there or something? And if there was, why is that in need of violating someone on the side of the road? Well, good news in this story is the Texas trooper, Kelly Hellison, has been indicted on sexual assault charges. But this is not the only case in Texas. There was another case, two black women this time. There were, it was in the Houston area. I caught this off of KHOU. Similar situation. Groped, one glove, just humiliated. There's dozens of black and Latino men who will tell you about being frisked by the NYPD and having their hands put down their pants and feeling around their genitals and their ass. Milwaukee cops, unauthorized searches, according to this one cop, Michael Vagnini, was a cop who was sentenced to 26 months in prison for this type of searching. And the last one, this fourth way that they're trying to bust people and how desperate they're getting. It's just so sad. If you're my age, you'll remember the Johnny Depp vehicle, 21 Jump Street. It's one of the first shows on the new Fox network, kind of launched his career. Well, 21 Jump Street was these teenage cops, or young cops, like in their 20s, right? New rookie cops that looked young enough you could put them in a high school to bust kids for stuff, right? And of course, they do this. This is for real. I mean, this really happens. In Riverside County, California, in December, the police department sent undercover cops into high schools. Now, in the one case, a very attractive blonde female cop befriends students to try to get them to buy weed. And in one case, she befriends this young boy who was a special needs student. His parents say he's got Asperger's syndrome, right? Kid who's already struggling socially, doesn't have a lot of friends. So they find, you know, it's almost like the wolf trying to pick off the weak zebra, right? Or what? Wolf? What the hell? Lion. Sorry. Mixed metaphor. Lion trying to pick off the... I crack myself up sometimes. The lion trying to pick off the wounded zebras, or the old, or the infirmed, or the too young, right? They're specifically targeting these socially awkward kids. Kids who probably don't have any contact with drugs normally. I mean, this kid, you know, reading the story of this kid in Riverside with Asperger's, he wasn't, you know, a pothead. He wasn't using drugs in any way. And when this woman, this cop was, you know, again, and remember, we're talking about an adult and a child here. And the allure of a relationship, the allure of female attention to draw a child into this. And he resisted all of her advances when she would say, hey, do you got some weed? You know, get some weed, you know, get some pills, whatever she was asking for. He's like, no, I don't know anybody. I don't know. And she just kept at him and kept at him and kept at him until finally the guy finds somebody to buy a 20 sack off of. And she has him do that a few times and then they bust the kid. And how is that? I mean, even if their supposed goal is to protect the children, you know, try to take the drug dealers out of the school, you're not taking the drug dealer out of the school when you're setting up the Asperger's boy to take the hit for buying some weed.
You're not solving the problem. You're making more problems than actually exist. And the reason why is the profit motive. The reason why is the grants and the asset forfeitures and the easy arrests and the padding of statistics and the quotas and the private prison corporations that contract with our states with contracts that require 90% occupancy. And it's all of these factors, the rehab industry that makes the money on these kids that get busted and then go through the system time and time and time again. You really want to solve this? We can't say it enough. Legalize the drugs. Get rid of the prohibition problems. Focus on problems that drugs actually cause. You know, needle exchanges are good things. Cannabis education would be a good thing. But stop making criminals where none exist. Hey, that's all the time we got here for Brian the Red. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. We're shutting down right after this. Moving to the new studio. Should take us an hour or so. Take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it.